720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with me. Lots to do on the show today. Coming up, we're going to be taking a look at the new jobs report and what those numbers mean to us, to the world, to this country, all that good stuff. And we're going to be taking a look at Yelp reviews. That is a kind of, that can be a hot button topic. People can, you know, small businesses can certainly frown upon a bad review, but it's also an interesting tool for the consumer. So we're going to be taking a look at that. In particular, there is a new ruling in California that impacts Yelp reviews in small businesses. But before we do that, we are joined by Robert Chanik, media reporter at Chicago Tribune, who wrote recently about the idea of napping at work and why some companies are embracing it, in fact, turning quite high tech with it. Welcome to the program, Robert. Thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here, Amy.
So,
how you doing?
Good. Well, I saw this on social media, of course, because I follow you on Twitter, and I thought, well, this is a pretty good idea. But is this, well, let's talk about what it even means to nap at work, but also is this a perk or is this golden handcuffs in disguise? What is this all about?
I guess I'm in the perk category, but it's good for business. I mean, the companies that are forward thinking and willing to let their employees sleep on the job get, you know, more productivity and clear, better adjusted workers. So, you know, it's both sides of the equation benefit on this one, the cliched one, I guess. Although it's still widely accepted. It's,
sounds like you're starting to break up just a tiny little bit, so maybe you can like walk to where you got more bars or something like that on your phone. You know, there's a quote in your bar.
Can you hear me?
Still breaking up just a tiny bit. You know what? Let me put you on hold. I'm going to let you chat
again
with esteemed producer Griffin for 1 second and see if we can get that all worked out. Okay. So there's a quote in this story that I think is very, very interesting. And that is from Sarah Mednick, who's an associate professor of cognitive science at the University of California at Irvine and author of a book on the benefits of napping. This is what she said. There's kind of a badge of honor for how little you sleep in this world, which is so true. And I feel like something we've talked about many times in this program, right? Epidemic of busyness, that kind of thing. She goes on to say, the idea of napping in front of people while they're all working really hard, there's not a lot of respect for that, which is absolutely true, which is completely a thing, right? I think that's even sort of the issue that trickles into like vacation and how we're kind of sometimes reluctant to take all our vacation and that kind of thing. So Robert, I you know, who is doing this? What companies are starting to experiment with this idea of napping in the workplace?
Well, high-tech firms, Google's a number of years. So the Silicon Valley types get it. Some ad agencies are doing it, but also some, you know, old school low-tech firms have been enjoying this for years. I talked to a couple guys from a phone company in Orlando that have a little break room for every afternoon sitting on reclining chairs, you know, so it kind of runs the gamut, but it partially because of the office modern scenario, it's not easy to get surreptitious nap anymore. So you need the blessing of the company to make it work in a lot of places, you know.
Right. The days of George Costanza napping under the desk thing, that's still frowned upon. But if you have the company's blessing, that's different.
Exactly, yeah. So it's, as I mentioned in the article, a lot of people do like to nap. I mean, it's like 40 to 50%. And if your office isn't, you know, particularly forward thinking on the subject, you have to find other ways, like George did, you know, building a little nap nook under his desk or going elsewhere. And I talked to some experts and they said, you know, people go to Starbucks, they go to the park bench, they go wherever they can kind of sneak in that 15 minutes and set a timer and make their way back to work without anyone knowing. But it's happening. It's definitely happening out there. A lot of you know, closet nappers have already reached out to me to say it's about time this came out into the light, you know.
Right. And then talk to me about this French company that has rolled out the Dream Box, which is this sleeping zone, like a sleeping cocoon to sleep in.
Exactly. It looks a little like a wooden, you know, trailer or something. It's hard to totally describe it. You go into this windowless room. In fact, if you go to the Chicago Tribune site, we have a little video of what it's like inside that particular box. But you can turn on these different sound and light atmospheres to, you know, kind of set the right mood. There's a pretty nice sized bed in there. You start this program and it kind of sets you off to bed for 15 minutes and then wakes you up. And, you know, very high tech and not cheap either. I think it was $19,000, but it's the kind of thing you can plunk it down in the middle of almost any office and people can go in there privately and get a little shut eye.
I have a feeling that would be a hard sell to, you know, convince a boss, hey, we need this, you know, $20,000 nap pod. But how could maybe a manager listening or even, you know, a non-manager worker listening who is thinking this is something for real that my company could benefit from, how would you recommend even starting that conversation at work? Because it seems like that would be a huge culture shift from the expectation of just, you know, work, 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 always on, always accessible kind of vibe that we have now.
Well, I think, I mean, there is research, and I talked to an expert, a nap expert, which actually exists, a sleep researcher, and, you know, there are studies that show that I guess you could kind of make the case that, that if you give people this little, you know, 15, 20-minute shut-eye in the middle of the day, they're going to be healthier, they're going to make fewer mistakes at work, they're going to be more productive. You know, it's sort of counterintuitive to see your colleagues snoozing while you're hard at work, but there are times of the day where people have less to do. There are times where the nap just overtakes you, and if you do it, you're going to wake up refreshed. I should mention, by the by, not to get too technical, and it wasn't in the story, but the sleepers said that that 15 to 20 minute power nap is a real thing, that you got to keep it under 30 minutes, that there's this danger zone. She called it like a mini hibernation. If you go out for 30 seconds, you get into this deep sleep, and the worker will wake up not ready to multitask or work well with others, apparently. You're just kind of zoned out. But if you sleep longer than an hour, it's very restorative. So that's why that 15 to 20-minute nap really is a thing. I mean, you don't want to get yourself totally snoozed out in the middle of the workday.
Right, and it probably anger a lot of coworkers, like, man, I'm sleeping for hours in there.
Exactly. Right.
Well, you know what? My grandfather, he lived a very, very long time, and he swore by eating healthy food, taking a nap every day, and always learning something new. So who am I to argue with napping? So there you have it.
Exactly.
Well, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet this story out after the program. Robert Chanik, media reporter at Chicago Tribune, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit to talk about Yelp reviews and how there is change afoot with them. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about the jobs report numbers that are out right now and what that means for us and what that indicates for us economically. But right now, we're joined by Claire Ballantyne, business intern at New York Times, who wrote about a recent California court decision that Yelp cannot be ordered to remove negative posts. The case involved a business owner who claimed that someone had used the site to defame him. Claire, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So talk us through this case. I think, you know, the small business owner versus, you know, angry customer on Yelp is one of those stories I feel like that pops up a lot. Sometimes someone writes some really epic post or someone has some really epic comeback, something like that. But this California court ruling has potentially changed how we operate a little bit.
Yeah, so it was actually a lawyer in San Francisco who had a client who she claimed defamed her on Yelp by posting a negative review, and she wanted this taken down. And so a lower court decision ordered Yelp and the client to remove the post. And then this got brought up to the California Supreme Court recently, and they actually ruled that Yelp did not have to remove the post and that choosing to remove the post was at Yelp's discretion.
And so what was the initial ruling based on? Was the idea that it was inaccurate or something else?
I'm not completely sure about that, but I think it was the judge ruled that the actual posting was defamatory and ordered Yelp from the client to take it down.
And so did you have the sense in reporting this that this is perhaps going to make a ripple of changes, maybe other states, or what happens now with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly a statement about online free speech. And, you know, it came out in Yelp's favor that Yelp isn't responsible for this review that was posted on its site. So I think it's that continual question of online free speech. And I think this was a win for free speech advocates. And of course, the counter argument is that, you know, what about online abuse and things like that? But this is, you know, just another step in trying to address that question.
Certainly. And I feel like that's kind of always where the tension lies, right? I think you can sometimes, I mean, we've all seen those Yelp reviews, right, that are like really just kind of way too brutal. Maybe they weren't happy with the service. That's fair enough. But it really became like a personal attack. You know, I've seen one that called like the maitre d' or the host person, you know, said they were like ugly and, you know, just like really went for it in a personal
right.
attack kind of way. And it does get at the question of free speech versus consequences for your actions and what you know, like yelling fire in a movie theater. And so I think this also speaks to a little bit bigger conversation around sites, you know, tech sites that are review based. You know, I think in particular, we've talked before on this station about Uber and Lyft and rideshare and how a lot of times drivers kind of have this balance of, do I just kind of suck it up and deal with this, you know, tricky passenger so that I don't risk getting a bad review versus, hey, you can't talk to me like that. You got to get out of my car. You know, I think it really kind of speaks to that.
Yeah, definitely. And the other big question is, you know, is Yelp liable for these statements that are on its website? And this ruling was, you know, was saying that that Yelp was not responsible for it. And so that gives Yelp a lot of more freedom.
Right. And do we, you know, is there conversation that's bubbled up around this, either pro or con of what this might, you know, might lead to down the road or what other conversations it might open up?
Yeah, I mean, I think this will continue to be a question. I know the San Francisco lawyer is considering an appeal to the Supreme Court. And so, you know, who knows what will happen next. But I think it's something that courts are going to have to continually try to address. This isn't going away.
Indeed. All right. Well, Claire Valentine, business intern at New York Times, thanks so much for being with us today. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet this story out after the program so you can read it for yourselves and we can continue the conversation. Thanks so much, Claire.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Yeah, it's a really interesting topic. I don't know, Griffin, I'm sure you've seen this, like tons of you know, Yelp reviews. Sometimes they just seem unfair. And yet we do kind of go to our peer groups to look, you know, if you go to a restaurant and all the Yelp reviews are terrible, you're like, maybe it's not that good.
Yeah. With any review website, a site that hosts reviews like this, especially customer-based ones, you do have to kind of play the numbers.
Yeah.
If it's a wave of things like that, then yeah, but you got to be careful reading one
right
review and going off of that. Although, I don't know. I have to say, I know that in my brain, but I will look it up. And if I see it, then it will affect.
It's there.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll be looking for that. Like if it says in particular, like, oh, the bathrooms are really messy. I'll have that in my head if I go there.
And I think that's worth discussing. Like, yeah. And I understand where this case came down, but I could see feeling the other way about it. It kind of is situational.
Yeah.
And depends. But especially when reviews, you know, now places rely on Google searches for people to find them and reviews pop up mm-hmm. immediately after, some right next to it. That's so tricky.
It is.
And I could see wanting way more control over that as a business owner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yet,
it's tough.
If you have a... You know, the only time I've ever really thought about, like, I'm going to go to Yelp. I'm going to put something down. I overheard a business owner saying something very racist about a customer.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I feel like that needs to be known.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that was like, it wasn't just my opinion of bad service or bad food.
Right.
It was like, they've really said some inarguably, you know, racist things. I want other people to know that I feel like that other customer wasn't being treated fairly because of what was being said. So, you know, things like that, it seems, you know, a little more cut and dry. Where it's really interesting, also is on Amazon. Sometimes you look at products and it's like, oh, there are 3 1-star reviews. one time I looked through to see what the reviews said, and they were all about shipping, and the postal service left the box in the bushes. I didn't know I got it in time. And I was like, that has nothing to do with the product. That's about between you and your, you know, UPS driver or postal worker, right?
Yeah.
That's got nothing to do with this product. So I think that's ever since then, now I read Amazon reviews a lot more carefully because I'm like, well, it could, the product is fine. It's just like your, you know, postal service has an issue.
No, yeah. And, but then it just comes back to, you know that you shouldn't base everything off of these reviews, but it is kind of like your smart brain and your dumb brain.
It
it's
is.
Like you see the number. That'll always be there rattling around somewhere. It's true. And you could say to these businesses, well, just don't be so reliant on Google or these kind of search or customer review sites. Like, just you're so reliant on those. That's why these negative reviews so inordinately affect you. But it's kind of the way the world works now,
yeah,
too.
You can't avoid it.
Yeah, so
I don't think you can change consumer behavior. People are in that habit of, what's near me right now? This is the kind of food I want. What's around? And I think that's how they go.
And I was reading about people looking for jobs, reading, you know, former employee reviews of the places they've worked, stuff like that. It's all so fraught.
That's
and I think that, yeah, this is a conversation that will continue to pop up.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. We've talked before about kind of the what we mentioned to Claire, though, that kind of balancing point, particularly for like Uber and Lyft drivers or people who are getting reviewed as opposed to a business getting reviewed. Because then it's a matter of, if you're not feeling safe, but you don't want to tank your rating. And, you know, I think that's a question no one should have to ask themselves. And yet here we are in the gig economy where you do. So lots to discuss. I'm sure we'll discuss it many, many times as we continue. But for now, let's take a little break, head on to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. We're joined now by phone by Stephen Esposito, who's the Senior Vice President and Wealth Advisor at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So the jobs report came out this week, and you are busily studying those numbers and making sense of all of it for us. And so we're glad to have you with us to break all that down. So what did that jobs report show?
Once again, the economy's got momentum and we're hitting on all cylinders. 213,000 jobs created for the month versus 190,000 expected. And a revised upward the last 2 months. So we're averaging about 215,000 jobs a month since the beginning of the year. It's fantastic. We're on fire here.
And did we see particular growth in any one industry more than another?
I mean, across the board, but manufacturing and healthcare saw the biggest jumps, which is wonderful. Manufacturing is coming back with a vengeance in this country. And again, we saw some job hiring in healthcare, and again, across all lines pretty much. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk a little bit about wage growth, because we can talk about jobs all day, but I think the popular narrative is that we've had wage stagnation for decades and it's really not moving forward. Are we beginning to see any signs of change there?
Actually, we are. So over the last 12 months, we're seeing about 2.7% increase in wages. The unemployment rate, as you know, is around 4%. It inked up a little bit, and that's because more people are coming back into the workforce, which is another good sign. So we're starting to see that. We're starting to see some wage increases, and I know employers that I talk to, they just can't find enough help. They can't find enough skilled labor, and all of them are telling me how they're giving people raises because, A, they need to, and, B, they can afford it.
And when we look at unemployment numbers, are those kind of, is that number nuanced, or is every, you know, one person standing equally? And by that, I mean, in particular, are recent college graduates versus people that are maybe actively looking for work, are they considered, you know, given equal weight or maybe sliced off into kind of different subcategories within this report?
Well, the government, as you know, it has subcategories, but overall we're seeing job growth, again, with college students. May not be getting some of the where their major was, getting a job in that area. But, again, the biggest complaint we're hearing from employers is they can't find enough people with skilled labor to fill these jobs. I think the last number I saw was 6 million job opportunities out there, and they just can't find people to fill them. So you are seeing it in every area, including people rejoining, coming back to the labor force. We saw that last month. People have been gone for months and years are returning. So the consumer confidence is up and people are looking for work and they're finding work and they're finding pretty good paying jobs. But like anything else, we want to see them receive more income and higher wages. And I think that's coming. If the economy grows, you'll see more of that. It's just a simple mathematical formula.
Mm-hmm. And in your line of work, I know you're talking with a lot of people about their personal money and how they're managing it and all that kind of thing. And do you, when these reports come out, do you see, you know, do you hear from a lot of clients that are saying, should I make a change? And what do you advise them?
Well, you know, we get that obviously on a regular basis. And I tell them, try to stick with your plan. You know, make sure you got the plan. Of course, you tweak it as you go along in general, but don't change the overall direction of where you're going unless there's a major problem there. But as the economy gets better, corporate profits will continue to grow. As profits grow, valuations will expand, hopefully, in those companies. But we do see in the market is two different tiers. You have the majority of the broad market isn't really reflecting the great economy. And there's a handful of sectors in the market, or one or two sectors, that are really leading and really skewing the broad market indexes. So when we talk about the market being at all-time highs, or actually we're about 8% away from the high in January, underneath the market is a lot of good industries whose stocks simply haven't reflected the economy, whether it be a little bit of fear out there or just whatever their concerns are. They're piling into, I think, sectors of stocks rather than the broad market. What does that mean? That means there's some great opportunities for clients, and I'm in there buying those companies who haven't been discovered yet.
And is that on par with what you were saying about the areas of job growth? Are those also reflected in the market being healthcare and manufacturing, or is that other sectors?
That's true. That's correct. Economics, look for manufacturing, look for healthcare, look at financials, look at consumer cyclicals, look at energy sector. The energy sector is back, coming back. Remember, oil a couple years ago was down around $26 a barrel, and now it's back in the low 70s. So you're seeing a lot of job growth in the energy sector as well, where companies are buying. That was one of the parts of the economy that was lagging, and now you're seeing that come back. So we're really seeing good numbers across the board, and that should reflect good for investors, across, again, in all categories. There's some really good opportunities to increase your net worth and your retirement plan here.
And you and I have talked about this before in the program, that when we're looking at jobs numbers, that is but one economic indicator. How are other things looking when we're talking about things like home sales and inflation and consumer confidence in general and auto sales and that kind of thing?
Again, it's been great. Consumer confidence is at an 18-year high, so people are really confident about the future. You're looking at home sales are very good. One of the problems in the housing sector, again, they cannot find labor. They can't find enough land. And it's a problem. They can't satisfy the demand that is out there, which is actually holding back home sales going forward. You also got a lot of geographic switches within the country as people are leaving state to state and moving for whatever myriad of reasons they have. But generally speaking, you got it across the board in all areas, home sales, car sales, everything is doing well. And let's just hope that continues. And I honestly think it will for at least a year or two, and there's some dramatic change in the economy or something should happen. We've got some serious momentum and wind at our back, so it's positive all the way around.
And all that said, there was a little bit of an uptick recently around Americans filing for unemployment benefits. How does that fit into this whole conversation?
Well, that's a weekly number. That is, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, they're saying 230 versus 250,000 unemployment. That could be just job changes, could be companies laying off or in one area but hiring in another. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to the weekly jobless claims. You want to look at the overall trend, and the trend is the fact that the jobless claims are down. I mean, they have 220 or 230,000 jobless claims on unemployment in the economy with 150 million workers. It becomes decimal points. So I wouldn't worry about that until we see a trend upward, and I don't see that happening. I just don't. There's nothing to indicate that would get worse going forward. Instead, it looks like it's going to get better, and people will continue to, you know, pretty much find the jobs they want.
Stephen, was there anything about this particular jobs report that was surprising to you, or maybe just something that seemed like it was heading in an interesting direction for the future months?
You know, it looks good. It's got a wind at its back. And a lot of people are expecting, you know, this first half to show some slowing. In fact, it's the opposite. The tax cuts are having an effect. The deregulation, the fact that companies are investing in plants and equipment, they're very positive. Despite all the negative news about, you know, trade and the fears of trade, you're still seeing hiring. You're still seeing people getting jobs. The restaurants are busy. The stores are busy. All of that is happening. So I don't see anything really negative right now in the numbers. Of course, tomorrow's another day. But I wouldn't look at monthly or weekly numbers. I would look at the overall trend. Look at a 6 to 12-month rolling number. As I said at the beginning of the show, that we're averaging 215,000 jobs a month, which is better than a lot of the pundits had said. And the talk of trade is affecting maybe some people to be hesitant. But don't read too much into that. I think eventually the trade will work it out. So I would, again, I'm positive. You can tell from my tone of voice, things are looking good. It's kind of like the day to day. It's a beautiful day out. And again, things are doing real well. So I would focus on that with your portfolio and your investments. Stay positive right now.
Yeah, well, you've just touched on two things that I want to ask you about. And one of those is, you know, it seems like you're indicating there's so much positivity, and yet it seems like there's a lot of uncertainty politically. And I know that can, you know, factor in. And I know you don't want, you're not here to talk about politics, but nonetheless, that has bearing on the way we think about our future and our money and that kind of thing. So those two things seem like there's perhaps a tension point there. But then also I wonder about the, you know, the tariffs that are on everybody's mind, especially this week, and what that's going to look like for consumer numbers.
Well, you know, it's the tariffs that it started. My understanding is the number is about $34 billion worth of tariffs the U.S. government's put on China. Understand that we purchase about $500 billion plus from China every year. They purchase about $130 billion from us. So there's a huge trade imbalance there. These tariffs are more of a skirmish than a war at this point. Could it escalate to a bigger situation? Anything's possible. But you get enough news and constant media attention to this, there's a lot of people blowing it out of proportion. There is a fear out there. But I wouldn't be afraid yet. It's really not going to affect the overall economy that much at this point. It is something to watch, which I am watching, like any other wealth manager would. But at this point, I think a lot of it's being blown out of proportion. The political landscape is what it is. We've been through landscapes before. But if you can take a couple steps back and bring the emotion out of the equation, I think you can focus more on the investments and the economy rather than a lot of the noise that is out there, which is what we're supposed to do, is focus on that. So the fear of what may happen in a trade war, maybe. I think it's difficult for the United States to lose overall. There are sectors that will be harmed, others will benefit. But overall, with the trade imbalances we have with all these countries, it could turn out to be actually quite positive. Let's keep our fingers crossed through the United States going forward. So I really wouldn't worry about that right now. I think the market's overreacting at this point. And what it does when it overreacts to the downside, it gives up investors an opportunity to buy stocks cheaper. And that's what I've been doing.
Stephen Esposito, Senior Vice President and Wealth Advisor with Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Amy. Have a nice day.
Thanks, you too. All right, we're going to take a little break and come back in just a bit with more from the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. So there is a cool story in the New York Times right now that is a very interesting thing. It's one of those unofficial things, and that is this. So people are taking like Lyft and Uber, and you know, you can do Uber Pool or Lyft Line, in which you share a ride with a couple of other people that are going the same direction. And so you get a discount. I've taken them and I've made some friends in the car and had some interesting conversations. I've even exchanged business cards with a few people. Well, this New York Times story is taking a look at that very thing. And the idea is that by, you know, you're kind of in this space with total strangers, but they've taken a look in this story at some really interesting serendipities that have happened. There was a guy who started like a nutritional drink and another passenger asked him about it, and that solved the problem for him. And suddenly the guy invested $150,000 in his business, things like that. I have yet to find that kind of passenger with me, but I've certainly exchanged business cards about people doing interesting things. In fact, recently there was a woman who had started a business and I said, oh, that would be so interesting. Once you get up and running and once you're, you know, ready to start talking about it in public, I would love to have you on the show, because it was totally in line with the stuff that we talk about here. But, it's kind of this, it's like a side benefit. So the story is called Is Rideshare the New LinkedIn? Which I hope so, because I don't love the LinkedIn. I don't like it. I think it's a little clunky, but it's a cool idea.
It is. It is. Not everybody has the same reaction. Some people do want to be left alone.
They do. Yeah.
And I was interested to see where they drew the line in that story. Everybody kind of has different rules. That's a new norm that we don't have figured out yet, because these ride shares are relatively new.
Yeah.
Like, we all take public transit together, but it's a different environment.
Yeah.
And that's more clear that, like, no, we don't talk here. So you could try to apply that, but it's different. It's a little, it's closer quarters. There's less of you. It's quieter. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't take the rideshare that much.
I don't either. But when I do, you know, like it's raining or something.
I only use Lyft if I'm like in a bind. So then I need to get there faster. Yeah. So then I just do it for myself. But I don't know how I would feel about, but it's, but you can tell that it's positive for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And clearly you're on it.
I've had good conversations. I had one negative experience in which there was a woman on the phone having a breakup as we were going, and I like needed to be on a conference call, and I was just like, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, you needed to do something, because that sounds like a positive experience maybe for eavesdropping purposes.
Sure. I do like that. Right? There's that for sure. The story also mentions, and again, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to tweet this out after the program, but the story also mentions how so many drivers have kind of another thing that they do in addition to, being a driver. So that I have run into too. One time I was in a car with this guy, and he was playing this really cool music, and I was like, "What are we listening to? It's really cool." He goes, "Oh, it's mine. It's my music." I was like, "Oh, interesting sales pitch." Yeah. But then he turned around and he handed me a little card that had like a download link, you know, and of where you could find the music. And I mean, that's fair. So that way, if someone asks about the music, fine.
Right.
If you don't,
that is a good tactic, because if you don't say anything about it, if they ask you what it is, they're expressing interest.
Right.
So then you've already got them on the line.
Right. But I would get my feelings hurt if I were him and they were like, "Can you change the channel? This music is terrible."
That's true.
Oh, man.
That is the risk, I guess. That's interesting. You have to be very assertive to ask someone to change it, though.
I think so, too.
I mean, I suppose those people are out there. I'm not one of them.
I've asked people to turn it. I mean, it's your car, do what you want. But yeah. I've been like, "Can you turn that a little bit down?
Turn it down, sure. That's different.
It's a little loud. I'm having to scream over things."
But it's just not what I prefer. Yeah, that's interesting. And then for drivers, it's much more tricky to bring that stuff up. In the piece, they mentioned a now defunct program at Uber called Uber Entrepreneur, which would alert people if their Uber driver was an entrepreneur or business owner of some kind when they hailed it.
Hmm.
I don't know what exactly the purpose of that is. I think it was probably like generating some good PR for like Uber relations with their drivers, because there's not much of that
yeah,
to go around generally. Yeah. And trying to open up opportunity for them or something like that, but it didn't work out. It's already done.
Yeah, and you know what? I think part of the joyful thing about it is when it's completely organic.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a woman sitting next to me on a rainy day in a Lyft line one day, and she was swiping through her phone and holding her phone in a way that it was, without being like creepy or invasive, it was very easy for me to see her phone, and she was like swiping through a bunch of pictures of puppies. So I said something like, "Oh, you must be a dog fan," you know, and we like had this lovely conversation about pets and, you know, all that. And I ended up like realizing we were from, she's her hometown is kind of near my hometown, and we just had this lovely conversation. If that had been kind of, you know what I mean, but that was a personal conversation, not a business one, but nonetheless, if the conversation had been thrust on me, it might have been different.
"Hey, do you like dogs?"
Right. The person you're getting in the car with likes dogs.
Oh, yeah. You know,
it would have been like that. So that kind of happened one time, because I was the first person the driver picked up, and he was like, "So where are you headed today?" And I said, "Oh, I'm going to work." "Oh, what do you do?" And I told him. And so then the second person gets in the car. "How are you? Where are you headed today?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to my girlfriend's house, and then I got to go to work." And he goes, "What do you do?" And the guy was, you know, he worked in food service, and he goes, "Okay, well, you know, so-and-so in food service, meet Amy, the radio host."
Oh,
and I was
wow.
like, "Oh, you don't need to."
You're not a game show host.
Yeah, like you don't need to facilitate this.
That's very interesting. Well, I'm always curious, yeah, the way that drivers, Uber and Lyft, relate to their job. Like, what do they see as their role?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, of course, getting you from one place to another. But then there, it is such a, it's like a new social space. That's what I keep coming back to.
Yeah.
Where it's just a little different from your relationship to a taxi driver. And a little different from, and your these other passengers, I would not respond well to that either, I don't think.
No, I felt like a little, like,
I didn't ask to meet them.
Yeah, he and I had a conversation. I had an expectation of privacy. We had a moment,
guy. I didn't know I was on the record, yeah.
I know I was on the record here about things.
That's fine.
Yeah, so what was that? Now, I'm sure, though, there'll be a second part of this, and at some point there's going to be, like, a Lyft marriage.
Oh,
or an Uber marriage.
Oh, yeah. I wonder, maybe there's like a relationship that's already serious and
yeah,
we just
got to
wait on the wedding day.
I'm sure that's happening.
Oh.
I mean, you know, we've started seeing like Tinder weddings.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's been happening.
I mean, there's a million of those. We were talking about on John Williams' show about the couple on the plane. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting story. It was one of those like, It was interesting to follow because it was uplifting and they were rooting for them.
It's sort of similar now that I think about it.
But it was also like, hey, give them a little privacy.
Well, that was what we were arguing a little bit about that because they just thought it was sweet. And I agree. I scrolled through the whole thing.
I did too.
And thought, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
But then the privacy thing was sort of in the back of my mind.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't.
I bet if you talked to the couple that got set up, if you don't know, there was a couple on a plane wanted to sit together, so they switched seats.
And ended up making a love connection with the people.
That ended up that sitting next to each other. Yeah, that took their seats, exactly. So, and then they documented it all.
I mean, they live tweeted the whole thing.
Went very viral.
Or live posted. Yeah,
we talked about it on John Williams. And I was just setting it up. Now I can't remember what I was going to say about it.
Well, and once they realized that it was a love connection, the woman who was posting it, she and her partner got really excited. And they were like, oh my gosh, they're both personal trainers. They both live in the same place. Oh, this is a thing.
Yep.
And then they walk off the plane together. And she goes, the real test is going to be baggage claim. And sure enough, they had, I guess, exchanged info. And it was exciting because, you know, we need a good, happy love story.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were one of those people... I wouldn't have been angry if I found out.
That's what I was going to say that I forgot. Yeah, I bet if you talk to them, they're not upset about it. I'm sure they're thrilled.
Right.
But...
unless one of them turned out to be some kind of homicidal maniac.
Yeah, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe when they break up in 6 months, then they'll right. be sad that any of it happened. But still, on principle, I think maybe take it a little easier with stuff like that. There was also the director Greta Gerwig was apparently being very loud at a screening of another movie a couple months ago, mm-hmm. and that got live tweeted and picked up, not nearly as viral, but I saw it, and it was the same thing. It was wonderful to read. It sounded hilarious, and like she's the best.
Yeah.
It was the movie I Feel Pretty by Amy Schumer, and I guess she talked through it, which is very funny to me. But still, like, maybe she should just be able to go to the movies and not have to deal with this other stuff. But anyway, that's all kind of tangential to the Uber and Lyft thing.
Well, that's all right. We are having more conversations about, like, public space because it takes so many forms now. It's not just walking down the street.
And
it takes another dimension with social media.
Do you want this transportation thing to always be like potential business opportunities? Like, do you want to be in that headspace?
Right.
Is that like imposing pressure on yourself outside of work?
Right.
Kind of following you around to different places now, things like
that. I would hate for it to be a mandated thing. Like, you're getting a ride, you know, you're getting in a car with someone who's a musician and you're joined by someone who's a marketing person. And like, if I knew that going in, it would feel very forced and I don't think it'd be great. But I think it's, I mean, I just love it generally in life when you have kind of a serendipitous interaction, when you get to say, oh my gosh, you do that, I do that. Or, oh, me too. I think that's so many friendships have started with, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only person who thought that. Or, you know, I think when it is just by chance, it's wonderful and bonding. When it's kind of forced, like, here, you're both in radio, talk to each other. It's like, okay. Great, you know? So we'll see. I'm sure Uber and Lyft will find a way to ruin it and force it on us. We shall see. But in the meantime, it seems like lots of cool business connections are coming up. And hey, if you're an entrepreneur and you find someone to help you do your thing, why not? I say go for it. But if you are in a relationship because of a Lyft line or an Uber pool, I want to hear from you because I think that would be very, very cool. And we'll talk about that on another show, I'm sure. But for now, we're going to take a break, get you to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.